Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, I'm Christopher Jones Cruz. At the Voice of America's Learning English branch in Washington. Welcome to As It Is, a free, daily, 30-minute program that helps you learn everyday American English. It's Friday, December 11th, 2015. It was on this day in 1934 that Bill Wilson, one of the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, drank alcohol for the last time and began treatment. AA, as it has become known, is an international group of men and women who have had a drinking problem. The organization says there are no age or education requirements, and anyone who wants to do something about his or her drinking problem can join. Millions of people say they have been helped. Today on the program, we'll tell you about calls from the Obama administration for Muslim American leaders to help in the fight against the Islamic State terrorist group. Then, as we always do on Fridays, we will bring you the economics report. We'll tell you about oil prices, which have fallen to their lowest level since 2009. And finally, we will present The Making of a Nation. Today, we will take you back to the spring of 1865. The Civil War was over, and the president who had led the Union during that war was dead. Abraham Lincoln had been murdered before the final surrender of Confederate forces. Now, the reunited nation had a new president, Andrew Johnson. He had been Lincoln's vice president. The Chief Justice of the United States swore Johnson into office a few hours after Lincoln's death. Most of Lincoln's cabinet was there, together with leading members of Congress. They looked to the new president with a mixture of shock and hope. That is our dramatic story today on The Making of a Nation. So, you can see, we have a lot for you today. Every day here on As It Is, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We are a little different here at VOA Learning English. Because we exist to help you learn everyday American English, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. President Barack Obama has asked Muslim American leaders to condemn extreme Islam. Spokesman Josh Earnest said Monday that the president would like to see leaders in the Muslim community stand up and speak out more forcefully in terms of condemning these hateful, radicalizing messages that we see from extremist organizations. Earnest said Muslims will be more effective if they are working in close partnership with the federal government and with law enforcement, and with our counter-terrorism professionals and with our neighbors to fight extremists. In a speech at the White House on Sunday, Obama said the Islamic State terrorist group does not speak for Islam. He said there are millions of patriotic Muslim Americans who reject their hateful ideology. The president said, "If we're to succeed in defeating terrorism, we must enlist Muslim communities as some of our strongest allies, rather than push them away through suspicion and hate." He called on Muslims to confront, without excuse, what he called the real problem of extremist ideology spreading within some of their communities. Mustafa El Amin, the leader of a Muslim religious center in Newark, New Jersey, said he agreed with the president. El Amin said that the Islamic State and other terrorist groups do not speak for or represent Islam in any way. He noted that many of the victims of terrorism around the world are Muslim. The president spoke in answer to violence last week in Southern California. Husband and wife Syed Rizwan Farooq and Tashfeen Malik killed 14 people in a shooting attack. The U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation called them radicalized. One of Tashfeen's few friends told the Washington Post newspaper that she became so religious, so serious, and so focused on Islamic teachings, and she lost her interest in her studies. Some of the president's political opponents said that the speech was disappointing and offered no new plans to fight the Islamic State group. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump called for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States. He said, "Until we are able to determine and understand this problem and the dangerous threat it poses, our country cannot be the victims of horrendous attacks by people that believe only in jihad and have no sense of reason or respect for human life." A similar response is seen in France, where a French political party critical of Muslims won local elections. Candidates of the National Front Party got the majority of votes in 6 of the country's 13 regions. The final result will be decided in a second vote on Sunday. After the deadly terrorist attacks in Paris last month, party leader Marine Le Pen said France should stop accepting Muslim immigrants. Conservative political parties have gotten support from voters throughout Europe in recent months. These parties often criticize immigrants and call for their countries to stop accepting refugees. Well, that's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. We would love to hear from you. Write to us at learningenglish@voanews.com. Our email address once again is learningenglish at voanews.com. And please know that we do read every message you send us. The Economics Report and The Making of a Nation are next. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from VOA Learning English Headquarters in Washington.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. Oil prices have fallen to their lowest levels since 2009. Brent crude oil, one of several kinds of oil on the world market, dropped below $40 a barrel on Tuesday. However, the main group of oil-producing countries has been unable to reduce production to limit supply. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries met in Vienna last week. OPEC said members should be part of climate change-related talks, such as the COP21 meeting in Paris. The group also called on members to maintain, in its words, an energy dialogue with countries that produce oil but are not OPEC members. About two-thirds of oil production is carried out by non-OPEC countries. But the 13 member countries could not agree on any production cuts. OPEC oil production continues at record levels. An OPEC report says the group's oil production increased to over 31 million barrels of oil per day. Some experts say OPEC member Saudi Arabia continues its production levels to keep competitors from gaining market share. Some producers in the United States use techniques like hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, to increase oil output. However, that method costs more than the traditional drilling techniques used in many other countries. These may include the indirect costs of pollution to groundwater or very small earthquakes in some places. OPEC says it continues its high production levels because it believes demand will increase in the coming year. Experts say worldwide demand for crude or unprocessed oil is already about 2 million barrels a day below the current supply. That has led some markets to have more oil than needed. That oversupply may grow as international sanctions on Iranian exports are lessened. Iran is an OPEC member. Indonesia also became a full member of the oil group at the December meeting. Demand for oil has been decreasing as economic activity in many important areas around the world has slowed. Economic growth slowed in the group of 19 nations that used the euro as money from July to September. Growth in the eurozone was 0.3% during that period. Slowing demand in China has also been blamed for low oil prices. China is the world's second-largest economy. Economic growth in China has slowed to a yearly rate of 6.9%, the country's lowest growth since 2009. And that's the Economics Report from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter.
Thank you. Welcome to The Making of a Nation. In the spring of 1865, the American Civil War was over, and the president who had led the Union during that war was dead. Abraham Lincoln had been murdered before the final surrender of Confederate forces. Now, the reunited nation had a new president, Andrew Johnson. He had been Lincoln's vice president. The Chief Justice of the United States swore Johnson into office a few hours after Lincoln's death. Most of Lincoln's cabinet was there, together with leading members of Congress. They looked to the new president with a mixture of shock and hope. This week in our series, Shep O'Neill and Tony Riggs begin the story of America's 17th president.
Andrew Johnson was, like Abraham Lincoln, a man of the people. He was born in North Carolina. His family was poor. There was no money or time for young Andrew to go to school. When he was 14 years old, his mother sent him to work for a tailor to learn to make clothes. Andrew worked hard. He opened his own tailoring business in the eastern part of the state of Tennessee. When he was 18, he married. His wife, Eliza, taught him to read and write.
Andrew became active in politics. At the age of 21, he was elected to the town council. 2 years later, he became mayor of the town. At 35, he won a seat in Congress in Washington. Next, he became governor of Tennessee. Then the state made him one of its two senators. The poor tailor boy was a success.
Andrew Johnson was a member of the Democratic Party. In the presidential election of 1860, he supported his party's candidate, not the candidate of the Republican Party, Abraham Lincoln. But Lincoln won the election, and, as a result, Southern states carried out their earlier threat. They began leaving the Union to form their own nation. Johnson opposed this secession. He believed the South should remain part of the United States. He decided he had no choice but to support the Republican president. Most of the other citizens in Tennessee disagreed with him. They decided to leave the Union. Andrew Johnson had to flee his home to save his life. He returned only after Union forces took control of Tennessee and made him military governor.
President Lincoln noticed the man from Tennessee who supported the Union over the opposition of others. In 1864, Lincoln decided to run for re-election. He chose Johnson to be his vice presidential candidate. Lincoln hoped Johnson would win the support of Union-loving Democrats. He hoped Johnson would help heal the wounds between North and South. Now, Lincoln was dead, and Johnson was president. It was up to this little-known former tailor to make the decisions on Reconstruction, on rebuilding the Union. Johnson, not Lincoln, would decide if Reconstruction would be easy or hard. Johnson would choose if the North would punish the defeated rebel states or be merciful to them.
The radicals of Lincoln's Republican Party wanted severe Reconstruction. They said the South was a defeated enemy. They demanded strong punishment for all Southerners who took part in the rebellion. These radicals had disliked Lincoln's plans for Reconstruction. They felt he was too weak. Now, they hoped Johnson would share their ideas. They urged him to call a special session of Congress to pass strong legislation against the South. The radicals had reason to believe the new president agreed with them. He had called the rebels traitors. He had demanded strong action against them when the war ended. "The time has come," Johnson had said, "when the American people should understand what crime is, and that it should be punished."
But Andrew Johnson surprised the radicals. He did not call the special session of Congress. Instead, he announced his own program for the Southern states. Johnson declared a pardon for all former Confederates who promised to support the Union and obey laws against slavery. Then he permitted former officials of the Confederacy to run for office in their state's new elections. Many of these former rebels were elected. The radical Republicans were angry. They saw these elections as proof that the South had not really changed. They accused Johnson of being too soft. They urged him to punish the rebels. One radical newspaper wrote, "There is only one sure and safe policy for the immediate future. The North must remain the dictator of the Republic until the spirit of the North shall become the spirit of the whole country. The South's treason is still unpunished. Southerners cannot be trusted."
The radicals also worried about what would happen to the recently freed slaves. They said the new state governments of the South would not treat blacks as free and equal citizens. As proof, they pointed to new laws the Southern legislatures passed. For example, the state legislature in Mississippi said no black person could rent farmland. It said a black person needed special permission to work at any job except farming. Mississippi also passed a law saying a black person could be forced to work for a white man, usually his former owner, if he had no other job. Another way the state governments in the South acted against blacks was by refusing to give them the right to vote.
The radical Republicans decided that President Johnson's Reconstruction program must be stopped. They began working to get control of Congress, to pass their own program. Only by gaining political power could they punish the South and guarantee full political rights to former slaves. The radicals tried to take control in two ways. First, they refused to let many of the recently elected Southern congressmen take their seats when Congress opened. Then they formed their own Joint Committee on Reconstruction. This committee, not the Senate or the House of Representatives, would make many of the decisions about Reconstruction.
radical lawmakers took other steps to seize control of Reconstruction efforts in the South. Congress had established a government agency to take care of black refugees in the South. The agency gave food and clothing to former slaves who had no food, money, or jobs. It began to teach them to read and write. Republicans in Congress moved to extend the life of the agency and increase its powers. They passed a bill and sent it to the White House for the president's approval. President Johnson vetoed the bill. He said it would create false hopes among former slaves. He also said it was unconstitutional. The radicals tried to overturn Johnson's veto. However, they failed to get the necessary votes.
Congress passed several other bills giving the federal government power to protect the rights of blacks in the southern states. President Johnson vetoed these bills, too. He said they interfered with the rights of the states. These defeats made the radicals even more angry. Their newspapers began a steady attack against the president and his policy toward the South. Some even accused him of treason.
Many Americans agreed with this criticism of President Johnson. They gave the radicals a big victory in congressional elections of 1866. Radical leaders gained the power to pass any bill they wished, even over the president's veto. And they wasted no time doing just that. Time after time, they voted to overturn Andrew Johnson's vetoes. The atmosphere in Washington became very tense. Relations between Congress and the White House sank to their lowest level in history. The political skies darkened. Soon, the storm broke. The radicals tried something that had never been tried before. They tried to remove the president from office. The conflict between the radicals and Andrew Johnson would provide some of the most historic and intense moments in American history. That will be our story in the next program of The Making of a Nation.
Our program was written by David Jarmel and Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Shep O'Neill and Tony Riggs. We invite you to follow us on Twitter at VOA Learning English.